Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We're on paper 43, section 2, which is old single column, page 487. All right, so we got started on not only this new paper, but remember, this is the first of a pair of papers that are a separate block on the constellation level of the local universes. So we went through the preface in the first section that gave us some of the basic orientation material. Got us coordinated into the space of the constellation level. And now we're ready to take a look at some of the details of what goes on at the constellation level.
Governance.
What was that?
Governance.
Governance, yes. A particular phase of governance. That phase that we pointed out is... we're being reminded of right in the name that they coin for our constellation. Unlike some of the names that they coin, there is some measure of actual specificity to our constellation name. It has that DEC suffix thrown on instead of just a TIA suffix, you know, indicating a place. Remember, they pointed out it has the two special colleges here. In this constellation, so they remind us of that with that DEC suffix. They've got the general thing that's true of every constellation with the LA part of Norla Shadek, you know, the northern law place. This is the legislative level, as we're about to get into tonight. But they do have that specificity also of the NOR, telling you that... we are somewhere in the northern regions as a constellation in our local universe. Remember again, there's, as we pointed out last time, there's a 100 constellations in every local universe, and they chose that constellation name. They didn't have to coin anything, obviously. You know, we have that term, and they decided to use it in a new form because it has a general conformity to the way we use it. We break up the night sky, you know, northern and southern hemisphere. We break up the night sky into 88 directions, you know, into 88 angular regions of the celestial sphere. Those 88 constellations, you know, 88's pretty close to 100. It works really well, and in that regard, numerically, and then, like I mentioned, basically when you're looking at the night sky, you're looking at stars in the local universe, you know, setting aside the Milky Way itself. So, you know, you're basically breaking up the local universe into, you know, into approximately 100 divisions with our constellations. And so... you always want to, you know, remind yourself that don't think, you know, think in relative terms about the use of language. They are, they're not just doing something simple like translating from some other language to English. That would be simply a disclosure of fact. To do something like that. That's not the purpose of the revelation. Purpose of the revelation is to reveal truth. You know, so you want to think in that not merely factual mode about everything in the revelation, so that you're always in a position mentally to be ready for some truth to flow through your consciousness. Rather than just being stuck on memorizing facts, which doesn't get you anything. you know, in regard to, like we were saying, names like Urantia or Nebadon or, you know, or Loshadec or whatnot, you can try to burn that into your adjuster memory so that you don't have to learn that in the next life. Well, guess what? No one on high is using those names, and so that's a wasted effort. Try to find the truth that's flowing through their use of the English language. Burn that into your soul, and that you can pick up and use, you know, anew in your next life. All right, so let's keep that in mind. The implications for truth, you'll see them right away. The point is not just to give us some facts about the government on high. The point is for us to begin to recognize the truths that flow through the structure of government on high and say, now what about what we're trying to do here? Is there truth flowing through what we're doing? Or maybe there has been truth, but it's beginning to be, beginning to sift through our fingers, and we need to take note of that. You know, that's the kind of thing we're looking for. How is this relevant to the truth of government on this planet? Not just what are the facts of government on high.
All right, yes, so perhaps in several billion years it may be Sulayshadek.
Yeah, right. It'll be some. I mean, if they were to give a revelation sometime in the far distant future, right, they wouldn't call it Nerlashadek. No.
Exactly.
Two, right. The constellation government. The constellations are the autonomous units of a local universe, each constellation being administered according to its own legislative enactments. When the courts of Nebadon sit in judgment on universe affairs, all internal matters are adjudicated in accordance with the laws prevailing in the constellation concerned. These judicial decrees of Salvington, together with the legislative enactments of the constellations, are executed by the administrators of the local universe, of the local systems.
Okay. Now, want to definitely make sure that you combine what they're pointing out about the pattern on high here in this paper with what they remind us of up in paper 134 when they're talking about political sovereignty. There's a very, very important element that God expressed in the truest form ever on this planet for the first time when a nation called the United States was established with states. Those states are in the same mode. There it says the constellations are the autonomous units of a local universe. Each of them has their own laws that govern their internal affairs. All internal matters are adjudicated in accordance with the laws prevailing in the constellation concerned. Right? When they are talking about political sovereignty up there in paper 34, they remind you up there about the key element of a state in the country of the United States, that where it says while each state regulates its internal affairs, notice the same internal affairs, internal matters, right? And then it is not concerned with foreign relations, tariffs, immigration, military affairs, or interstate commerce. Neither do the individual states concern themselves with matters of citizenship. You know, that issue, again, they're not just reminding you of some facts. That would be a complete waste of space in the revelation on the part of the midwayers to use all those words to remind us of something we can look up in our middle school civics textbook. Okay? What's the point? As they point out up there in paper 134, If you don't develop that structure where you have these quasi-autonomous units that put themselves in a federal relationship under a central government, if you don't establish that model and perpetuate it forward into the future, there is no path to the achievement of peace on Earth. The world government that brings that about. That world government, if you think you can establish a world government where there's just one nation, I mean, you're delusional. On even a normal world, you know, let alone our world, the only way to get to having a world government is if you have nations that govern their internal affairs, you know, have their laws, you know, and just the really big picture issues are dealt with by a central government. That's the only way to do that. If you don't recognize that, I mean, think about what the alternative, you know, would be. Establishing just one set of laws. Well, I guess if we had some sort of an absolute totalitarian dictatorship that we set up on the planet, you know, and we just killed people until we had the five people that would all agree with one set of laws, okay, and then they were peaceful with each other, and we'd have peace on Earth and world government. And that's not the path forward. And where does that come from? Okay, it's not a coincidence that that pattern began to manifest, and that the Revelateurs remind us of it, and how important that is to this planet having a future that you would be interested in imagining. Up there when they're talking about political sovereignty, the thing they want you to be reflecting on there is, you know, saying, "Now think about this. Is this what your country is like now, the way it's supposed to be? Or are you slowly losing a federal government with states and their independence, their relative independence? Are you trying to erase those lines and have a national government instead, you know, and make every state have the exact same laws, okay? And you're doing it because you're motivated by a burning desire for unity in your spiritual consciousness, you know, that we all have one set of things. Okay, are you in conformity with the cosmos, with your spiritual thinking like that? Well, of course I am. My spiritual thinking is innately divine. No, it's not. It's wholly false. The pattern on high is the constellations are the autonomous units of a local universe. Okay? There's not one set of laws. There's 100 different laws. And they're all respected. You know, no constellation is clamoring to have another constellation adopt its laws so that they feel justified in their laws, because they're so insecure that they need to impose themselves on a neighboring constellation. So this is a very important thing, you know, and it's becoming more and more one of those definitive little signs of why this book is in my lap.
Why it's in English.
What's the emergency, you know, that's going on? What things are eroding? You know, well, basically everything. But there's some very key things that the Revelateurs point out. That if you lose that, you're losing the future. Okay? Now, of course, obviously we don't literally lose our future of light and life. But, you know, you'll get to it instead of in a more direct way, you'll get to it by going through a deep valley of an interregnum, you know, for 1,000 years or something, 2,000 years. And the last one was 900. This one is going to be a lot more cataclysmic, likely to think it'll be a lot more than 1,000 years. Very, very, very important element to tell your spiritual consciousness, no, that is a false sense of unity you have there. Individuality consciousness needs a voice here. There are individual constellations, and they have different laws. And there needs to be individual states.
Doesn't mean a lot of laws aren't similar.
No, doesn't mean they're not similar. Right? But you need to allow for the difference. I mean, how much more important is it for constellations to have separate laws than for our states to have separate laws? Okay, we're barely personal in our manifestation yet on this planet. That absolute uniqueness of personality is hardly in play. Okay, on high, there's very definitive personality manifestation. There has to be the flexibility in the system to allow for that definitive differences. Now, there's not a separate constellation for each person on high, each absolute unique personality. So there is unity, yes, but not unity in the absence of individuality, at the expense of individuality. It's individuality and unity blended together in a harmony. You know, they're teaching us how this blends together. You know, and they're also teaching us about that other not coincidental thing about our government, that we have an executive branch, a legislative branch, and a judicial branch. You know, the celestials have brought that down and expressed it on our world for the first time in our country. It's a divine expression that again is getting severely blurred. And we've got to take note of that. What things that are definitive expressions on high that are under extreme assault, blurring the lines between states, blurring the lines between the branches of government. That's blurring your relationship with the cosmos. You don't want to do that. And then on top of that, with the branches, we're learning how they break up on high. Our first thought is, well, Michael must be the chief executive, or at least Gabriel, and so the executive branch must be at the local universe capital. No. The judicial branch is at the local universe capital. Legislative is in the middle, and it's the executive is down at the bottom. So we'll get into that more as we get into local systems, you know. But all these things about what this is trying to teach us about how things are balanced on high, so that we can reflect on how to downstep those ideals into ideas that match up with this world. It's different for every world, but the basic pattern is the same. Three branches of government, et cetera. Okay, so, you might even notice too, you know, just as we were talking about the 88, you know, constellations that are in the celestial sphere, and there's 100 of these constellations we're talking about here in the local universe, and, you know, numbers in that ballpark, you know, and we have 50 states. just notice how, they're all in that tens of, you know, sort of range. So that kind of, you know, just reminds you that there's probably some subtle superconscious things in play as we took the uncharted land of North America and began to divide it. We're going to have a natural tendency to kind of have something that's in that ballpark. We're not going to have 10 states. Or 10,000 states, you know, it's going to be something that kind of more fits into this mode, like they're talking about, where you have 100 autonomous units under one supreme judicial authority. All right, what else do they say here?
Constellations thus function as a legislative or lawmaking units, while the local systems serve as the executive or enforcement units. The Salvington government is the supreme judicial and coordinating authority.
And again, you're going, well, okay, yeah. But just, you know, you notice that, yeah, you have an executive branch, and that branch is for what purpose? Is it for making laws? No, it's for enforcement. All right? I mean, they're purposely sort of just like repeating some of the elements in our Constitution just so that we, you know, because we're forgetting. So they're putting it in a revelation in front of us, okay? Who's supposed to be the enforcing the laws, whatever those laws might be? You know, and who's supposed to be, you know, handling things in the judicial mode? And what are they supposed to be doing? All right, so, you know, a supreme judicial and coordinating authority. You know, it's like you think about the Supreme Court. Is it staying in that coordinating authority mode, or is it starting to micromanage and it's so driven by unity consciousness that it's demanding, you know, universal impositions? And right, see, we need to think about this stuff. It's not all about our positive desires of spiritual consciousness. We need to remember that the implementation issues are important. Liberty is a wonderful thing, but not so much if you stick the adjective false in front of it. Right? All of these potentially positive spiritual facts, like liberty or love, are just potentially positive, not innately positive. They're also potentially negative. There's false love. There's false liberty. And then some things are just, some spiritual facts you don't want to go there at all, like pride. Yeah. That's a spirit word you don't want to abide with in any way, shape, or form. There's no way to put the adjective true in front of pride. It's always false, and always goes before a fall. And that's the kind of, you know, that's the most important thing that's coming into play here. The issues of your individuality consciousness and whether or not you've lost sight of them, never thought about them, dismissed them, they need to be brought to the fore again, because we're losing our cosmic conformity. It took a million years to get a country that began to reflect the government on high. And they're watching it evaporate. And it's an emergency. And they sent a book for those who had ears to hear. All right. So let's think about this. Constellations thus function as legislative or lawmaking units. Let's get into that a little bit more here as they go forward. Okay.
While the supreme judicial function rests with the central administration of a local universe, there are two subsidiary but major tribunals at the headquarters of each constellation, the Melchizedek Council and the Court of the Most High.
Is it just, you know, the one little thing there? Okay, so, you know, it is like we have. You know, we don't just have a Supreme Court. You know, our judicial branch isn't just the Supreme Court. There's a whole hierarchy. You know, you have a hierarchy of a judicial system, you know, on high, too. You know, it goes all the way down to the roving conciliating commissions, you know, and could be set up in this room if they wanted to. It isn't all just on Salvington. But the supreme judicial authority is there. All right, so that, and then it's like, well, okay, so how does that work? How do they, what kind of a downstepped expression of their supreme judicial authority? You know, in what way do they express a downstepped, a downstepping of that?
All judicial problems are first reviewed by the Council of the Melchizedeks. 12 of this order, who have had certain requisite experience on the evolutionary planets and on the system headquarter worlds, are empowered to review evidence, digest pleas, and formulate provisional verdicts, which are passed on to the Court of the Most High, the reigning constellation father. The mortal division of this latter tribunal consists of 7 judges, all of whom are ascendant mortals. The higher you ascend in the universe, the more certain you are to be judged by those of your own kind.
Okay, we'll get to the last part first, which ought to, you know, ring a bell again. But okay, so the So, you know, obviously one of the things is just the same sort of system we have where if it's a very local issue, it's being dealt down at a more local level. Yeah, so of course that's part of the hierarchy. But they have this interesting system where they have sort of a two-step process, you see, a two-stage process of not burdening the Constellation Father and those mediate courts with all of the details. You know, a lot of the details get coordinated and set up, and then that coordinated essential knowledge is handed, right, to the actual Court of the Most High for, you know, the final adjudication of what's in front of them. But they don't have to, you know, he doesn't have to deal with all of the countless, you know, minutiae, right? So that shows all kinds of material pragmatism. You know, notice the material pragmatism on high. It's not just spiritual idealism, again. They've got all kinds of very pragmatic things set up. And they've got these 12 Melchizedeks that have certain requisite experience on the evolutionary planets and on the system headquarters worlds. So, you know, you have that very fundamental element that they remind us of so many times about how, you know, like with Michael. I mean, he isn't sovereign of the local universe until he has the requisite experience, right? I mean, it's fundamentally, we're dealing with a domain that's under the evolutionary deity, under the umbrella of the Supreme. And everything that is true is fundamentally experiential. You have a little bit of initial existential seeding of the experiential domain to get it started, but as soon as that can be replaced by that which is definitively experiential, you know, it will be and is. Right? Like I've mentioned recently, you know, remind yourself of you know, the initial little kickstart that you're given existentially. You're given a number of things by grace that gets you going because you can't self-initiate. You're not God. But as soon as you can choose and establish those things on your own, you need to. You're not allowed to use even the tiniest little bit of a stepping stool to, you know, that was just given to you to get to paradise. You know, to get you started, yes. Then as soon as you can build your own stool and you know, hand that one back, you know, you put your own stool in there, you know, so that it's everything that you are on the Isle of Paradise is through your choice, your free will choice. And you have acquired it through an experiential process. That's a fundamental aspect of the domain we live in. We don't live in the central universe. It's that, you know, that's the complement to everything I just said, you know? Yes?
You know, like here in the United States, like for instance, every, you know, people judge everybody that's like the president. You're judging them, you're judging all the people that are trying to become president, you know, all that stuff. Uh-huh. So when we get up there, you mean to tell me that we're still going to have to be dealing with that crap?
Well, again, remember, we don't drag our crap up on high and then belabor on high with it. You know, what we experience here seems like, quote unquote, use your words, crap. very subtle term. It's because it is a very benighted, downstepped expression of what's on high. You know, as you go up, you don't go up into ever greater piles of ignorance, you know, in a legislative branch, say. You know, you begin to liberate yourself from all of that bondage. The truth goes up. You know, the very benighted facts don't. Right. So, I mean, again, you know, when they say legislative or lawmaking units, we're all thinking like, okay, you know, so they're all getting together and naming a post office after themselves or something, you know, like our legislature does. It's like, no, yeah, okay. I mean, what they're actually doing, we can't even imagine. I mean, we can't even imagine what it means to make laws on high. You know, remember, I mean, you can't even imagine what a day in a life is for you on the first mansion world, right? So remember to not be night all of this with our ignorance, right? These are all some sort of transcendent, truthful expressions of what we now experience very dimly and very darkly, right? As we go up, we'll begin to experience the just indescribable beauty of legislative and lawmaking units, you know, or judicial, you know, actions. I mean, everything will be the sublimest, most beautiful thing that you can't even imagine, right? And that's, you know, so, but the basic elements are nonetheless there. So, you know, you take heart and there's, even though there's very benighted facts that we wallow in, there is some measure of truth here nonetheless. There's a truth to the three branches of government, no matter how ignorant the people are that are populating the three branches, okay? And seemingly hopeless. Take some solace in the, you know, in what they're revealing to us here. You live in a country that is potentialized like no other, you know, in its beginnings of conformity to the cosmos. The potential that's here should excite us. You know, they're trying to remind us of just how exciting a place this is, how much potential there is here, and how sad indeed it would be for that potential to be lost for generations and generations until, you know, the planetary government can find some way after countless centuries to get it back into play again. You know, that which, you know, it will, that which revelation fails to accomplish, evolution will always achieve. You know, the Supreme, in its glacial fashion, will slowly bring three branches of government around again. But why reinvent the wheel? Why not just marvel at how they've achieved it already and very earnestly take a hold of it and never let go of it again? Like Abraham Lincoln encouraged us to do at the end of the Gettysburg Address. Don't let the light go out. You know, it's going to take a long time to get lit again if we let it go out. Was there some question? Oh, yeah, John.
Well, one of the things that I do, you know, when you look at this, you can sort of, because we come from a rebellion system, you know, I mean, there must have been a lot of this going on during that period of time. And they talk about it in different papers, the different people that went in, the different kinds of beings that went in, and so a lot of that may have been, you know, part, I would imagine, would be some of the judicial problems that were going on at that time. And you can sort of think, you know, imagine some of those kinds of things at a human level, I'm sure, but
yeah.
That would give you some ideas of, you know, there's only 12 of these guys, so it's probably not the, you know, stuff happening, you know, every moment of all the time, because, you know, then there'd be 12,000 of them or whatever.
Well, but again, remember, you know, there's a huge complexity. You've got all the conciliating commissions and all that. Right. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, vertical structure to all this.
Seven judges.
Spreads out pyramid-like, you know.
But those are the kinds of things that, you know, I would imagine are going to definitely be brought up, you know, when they talk about, look at all the different beings that had to be choose whether they're going to go on one side or the other, and some chose one
That's
and some chose
point.
Another. And,
yeah.
You know, and how did you judge them, and what happened? You know, what?
Yeah, but there's all kinds of things. There's all kinds of things, you know, we just, you know, it's hard for us to even imagine, you know. The Melchizedek definitively see things this way. The Lenonidex definitively see things this way. It has nothing to do, you know, with one of them, you know, the Lenonidex drifting off into rebellion or anything. It has nothing to do with that. They're all rock solid, but they see things differently because they're different types of beings. They can't see things the same. They disagree. Someone has to adjudicate the differences. You know, that's what the whole process is for. You know, it's again, there's... we have this false illusion because of our spiritual consciousness that as we go up, all the differences melt away. It's like, is that what the revelation tells you? Does it tell you that as you go up, you become less personal and hence less potentially different? No, it tells you you become more personal and hence more definitively different. The higher we go, the more we don't see eye to eye. No two persons as full persons, you know, innately see eye to eye. They're absolutely different.
We learn how different. To live together.
Right. We learn how to transcend the absolute differences of our personality. We learn how to bring in super absolute transcendence to bring ourselves together. It's nothing easy. Right? You have to go super absolute to resolve the differences between personalities. It requires Mother Deity. It's a very profound transcendent thing. It does not, you know, even for very high beings, it is not trivial and automatic at all for them to go super absolute in their expression of reality. Right? That's what we're talking about here.
Maybe they're more adult about it.
Well, sure.
If there's a problem, then in fact, maybe they want, like, for example, if they're the problem, they're turning themselves in and saying, well, I want to be better. And
Right. If a Melchizedek is found to be in error, he doesn't look for a scapegoat. He doesn't blame it on, you know, poor upbringing, you know, or the other political party or something.
Yeah.
Right? He owns up. That's me. I have a blind spot. Please help me to fill in this blind spot, right?
That's true.
Right. takes courage to be a Melchizedek too, not just to be a human. You have to courageously face up to your imperfections, you know, and work on being perfecting all the time.
Yeah, we have something.
Oh, you got something? Yep.
In this process today on Earth?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, see, that's the most mind-boggling thing about what I'm saying. I mean, you know, for profound things to happen on this planet, there has to be some measure of personal expression, which means that that distinction is in play. We all fundamentally need the transcending influence of Mother Deity to help this work. You don't establish peace on earth and goodwill among men until you begin to transcend this island universe starting point that the Father made us. The Father made us absolutely distinct. He's not the actuality of harmony. Now, he is the potential of harmony. At the same time that he made us absolutely different, and hence not harmonious, he also potentialized the harmony. We can be kindred spirits because of what he did, and kindred spirits is the potential for the brotherhood of man. The consecration of our wills to the perfect will of God the Father's, you know, taking a hold of the fact that we're kindred spirits potentializes that, but it doesn't actualize it. It doesn't actualize the brotherhood of man. We have to be kindred minds. We have to transcend kindred spirits. We have to consecrate our minds to the universal harmony of God the Mother. See, that universal harmony is a harmony of power and personality. Personality is predicated on absoluteness. Power is predicated on absoluteness. The Isle of Paradise is the absolute of pattern. Right? Those facts that are being harmonized in the universal harmony, power and personality, begin as absolutes and yet still harmonized. See, by definition, you're going super absolute to harmonize that. Only that co-infinite nature that comes down through the Mother Deity allows for it. I mean, just to appreciate how profound it is when two atoms, which are distinct patterns, work together in a harmony. You know, we just take that as some trivial thing that is nothing profound at all. No, everything is extremely profound. That there's any relationship between any two things is a transcendently profound fact. once you recognize what things really are and what's required to make them work together, you know, for your mind to know of the existence of your body, there's nothing trivial about that. That requires transcendence of the absolute level for you to have any awareness of the existence of your body. Your consciousness is in the is in a mind energy system. Your body is not a mind energy system. It's a material energy system, and those two systems are absolutely separated. Everything about your experience, the more you know about what it is, it really is, should leave you in just awe of what's going on. My ability to move my hands and jabber my mouth like this, and it's all just incredibly profound that any of that is possible. Right? Rocks don't do that. Blobs of dirt don't do that naturally. Right? And how it is that this blob of protoplasm does that, you know, should be very humbling and awe-inspiring to all of us. Okay. Let's see, where were we?
Constellation legislature.
Yeah, let's see. Let's just make sure we get off on those tangents. Let's see if we left anything behind on the table here. Let's see. Right, okay, yeah, that's right. We had the whole Melchizedek stepping in and then getting things all coordinated and handing it off to the court of the Most High. Oh, yeah, that's right. We got that other biggie in there. It's like, the mortal division, the mortal division of this latter tribunal consists of seven judges, all of whom are ascended mortals. Right, okay, now they don't mean they snatch someone up off the planet here and throw them up into, you know, into a judicial body up there on the constellation level. Okay, these are mortals that have ascended all the way up to the point now where you can serve eye to eye with the constellation father. And we've referred to this. Here's an example of that again. You have the kind of objectivity and integrity that you can serve in a judging role for the entire constellation. And think about what that says. I mean, how far am I removed from any ability like that right now? I mean, I can't even comprehend how I could ever achieve such integrity. Okay. But I will, beyond my wildest imagination, I'll be able to, you know, take over for the Most High. You know, like I've said, you know, you get there and it's like, oh, I'm so glad you're finally here. Now I don't have to do this anymore. Here it is. You know, and it just keeps on going until you get all the way up to the capital J judges. Right? You know, where the Most Highs are kind of their deputies. You know, the Ancients of Days, you get up there and God, capital J judge, says, okay, I want you to adjudicate this super universe issue. So, you know, because you can do it, and that means me, God, I don't have to do it anymore. Right?
Does it keep going up like that?
It just keeps on going up and up and up and up.
These seven mortals, then after they ascend, then seven more judges?
Yeah, and seven more will take the place. You know, and obviously, it's not just going to be any old. I mean, these are going to be mortals where they, you know, it's discovered that they have a very keen insight in this regard.
Aptitude.
Yeah, right. Right. Their personality and their self are such that, you know, they can take on this role. I mean, you know, one of us, you know, maybe not even remotely close, you know, when we get up at this level, we'll be able to do that. But, right. Because we'll be in a different mode. You know, maybe we'll be, you know, an astronomer or whatever. Right? But there will be those who have this natural aptitude, like you were saying there, Don. And then that last one, see, the higher you ascend in the universe, the more certain you are to be judged by those of your own kind. Okay? Again, a reminder of that. So, they're telling you what's the pattern on high. And you go, wait a minute, I recognize this whole being judged by a jury of my peers. I recognize this idea. oh, we didn't think that up. That came down. Yeah, all things come down. All patterns come down from on high. Okay, that's a very sacred fact that's beginning to be expressed, okay, on this planet. And the responsibility, the obligation that's inherent in that. You know, think about what the founding fathers were assuming when they set that up. They're assuming that the citizens of this country are integrous enough that they can start to do the kind of integrity, you know, sorts of things that only happen way up on high.
They're integrous enough not to skip out of jury duty.
Right. You know, and then when you and even if you don't skip out of jury duty, you know, you're not just a clueless idiot with no relationship to the cosmos at all. Okay, that you have some measure of objectivity.
How many people have been in a jury?
I'll go there, but they never choose me.
Yeah, not too many have actually gotten selected. You know.
I've got a felony, so I'm...
But it's interesting what you say, though. It's an interesting thing.
Just, you know, recognize what an incredibly challenging thing we're trying to take on with that simple thing of judging ourselves like that, you know, taking on the obligation and the sense of duty, the recognition of obligation and the sense of duty to do a celestial-like thing, right? To have the cosmic integrity to be able to judge. all right, so you see, it's just almost every single, you know, statement here is just ripe with a little reminder of what we're trying to do in this nation that no humans have ever attempted to do before, and how it's so easy to see how this is falling apart. You know, when people don't even know who George Washington is. Mm-hmm. Or what state they live in, should they be judging their peers, quote-unquote? I mean, you know, if we're that hopelessly ignorant, right, this will not work. Because we're downstepping something that's not just on the first mansion world. Okay, we're downstepping things that are up quite a ways above where we are in terms of their direct expression on high. So it's a supreme challenge to reach up high enough within yourself to have even the faintest little shadow expression of such high things. So it's not going to happen without very definitive taking delight in cultivating, having some cosmic consciousness. It's not going to be anything that you can do just because you plopped out of your mother's womb. Right? It's going to be very, very personal and involving choice.
I may not know who George Washington is, but I got 200 followers.
and lots of people say they like me. All right. All right. All right, let's get some more here.
The Constellation Legislative Body is divided into three groups. The legislative program of a constellation originates in the lower house of ascenders, a group presided over by a finaliter and consisting of 1,000 representative mortals. Each system nominates 10 members to sit in this deliberative assembly. On Edentia, this body is not fully recruited at the present time.
Okay, so just maybe take that last little footnote sentence there. We don't know, you know, the exact status of the local systems in our constellation, but we know, in terms of the whole local universe. I think we mentioned this last time. Remember the last local system headquarters worlds were built just 5 billion years ago. So in the grand scheme of things, not that long ago. Remember, they got the local universe headquarters worlds and all the constellation headquarters worlds, you know, all 771, all of those worlds, all the constellation and local universe headquarters ones built, basically 300 billion years ago. Took them about 1 million years to build all those, relative to hundreds of billions of years, all back at about 300 billion years ago, all of that stuff was built. And we didn't have our first inhabited world until about 200 billion years. Right? So you had all these worlds we're talking about here, they were sitting there for 100 billion years before there was any, actual mortal worlds. Okay? So that little bit of information, when they say that it's just, that there's local system headquarters that were built just 5 billion years ago, well, okay, I shouldn't be surprised if there may be local systems that, don't even have any inhabited worlds in them yet.
Well, I took it to make it that we're the ones that were isolated didn't have representatives.
No, but there's only one local system.
What?
There's only,
It says each system dominates 10.
Yeah, but, our rebellion, is, just one system.
Right, so but it says, this body is not fully recruited, meaning, I thought that meant that we're not there, so it's not fully recruited.
No, I mean, things are, that's all resolved now. I mean, things are back into normal with that now, that was all over in 2 years' time, remember, the actual disruption of things. And at the very least, now that post Pentecost and especially at the beginning of the 20th century, things are back in order in that regard. They're just saying that it's not fully recruited because you just don't have you don't have any inhabited worlds in some local systems yet. Right?
No.
And another thing that speaks to that is remember they tell you that. In our constellation, there's some very, very rugged energy-wise areas yet, right, that haven't been brought into control yet. So, obviously, in those areas, you couldn't have inhabited worlds yet.
System architectures may be there.
The architectural worlds are there, and all of the master physical controllers that are just, intensely clamped on and shielding those places, right? That's all fine, but, but to have... just regular old inhabited worlds in such a an uncontrolled environment still,
That's why our planet number is so low.
Right, and they remind us, they're kind of pushing the limits to have this region of space have an inhabited world in it. They remind us that outside of our, the bubble that the master physical controllers make for us, things are pretty vigorous and, would not be, habitable. Okay, so... All right, so that little phone. But then, so we've got this, we've got a legislative body that's broken up into three houses, as it were. We've got the one that's obviously parallel to our House of Representatives. And again, it's not the lower local universe beings. No, it's senders. Again, it's not just the judicial things that mortals are ready to have the integrity to handle. It's also directly the legislative things. All right. What about one that's kind of like the Senate? Go ahead and just read some more there.
The mid-chamber of legislators is composed of the seraphic hosts and their associates, other children of the universe mother spirit, of the local universe mother spirit. This group numbers 100 and is nominated by the supervising personalities who preside over the various activities of such beings as they function within the constellation.
Okay, so you can notice the kind of rough parallels again. We've got a large number of representatives in the House of Representatives. And the more people we have, the bigger it gets all the time. The more local systems get inhabited, the more it gets closer to 1,000. And then how many senators do we have? 100. How many do they have in their mid-chamber? 100.
Yeah, but that's just because we got 50 states.
Yeah, I know it is. I know it is. Sure, it is. But just notice how, you know, again, you know, it's not that we are supposed to have 100 senators, you know, and we can't allow Puerto Rico to be a state or something, right? Right, of course, back then, right, we didn't have 100. Right, I mean, but just, it's just like I was saying with, you know, just notice how there's these kind of, you know, rough, you know, same order of phenomenon. There's likely to not be just coincidence in play there. Okay, there's some, yeah, there's some pattern that's going on there. You know, and even the bit, you know, of kind of the different, how with the seraphim and like beings that are in that second house, they're nominated by their supervisors. You know, remember how before we had the people electing senators, remember the state legislatures, you know, elected the senators. You know, and so you had that bit of difference in, you know, in the process of how you came to be in the two, you know, bodies of Congress. Right? See, so you can see shades of this. Right? Just kind of interesting to think about.
So two groups. One's the senders, which I imagine is mostly moral, but maybe not. And then the other seraphic hosts. And the first one is presided over by a finale. They're pretty high.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other is, doesn't really say, is it supervising personalities or whatever? They're nominated?
Well, they're nominated, but, you know, they're just, I mean, it's you know, they're much more self-coordinating, maybe is the word. Yeah, you know, the fact that there's a finaliter that's presiding over it is, you know, a little reminder that you need someone that kind of has a really, really big picture to kind of help all the ascenders. But other than the ascenders, you know, needing some help with the you know, to really see the big picture properly. Once they're shown the big picture, they have the integrity to put forward laws within that, you know, that context. Right? So you have those two bodies, and then there's a third that we don't have.
Darn.
Oh, it's our.
Darn.
You had some.
Well, again, the finaliter. What is the finaliter? The finaliter is a
one-time ascender. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's same thing.
Right.
He's just got more experience and
more than likely he's not from this super universe, but whatever.
But it doesn't matter. He's still an ascender.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, again, that's, you know, that very fact that you're saying, he's most likely not from the super universe, that's just a reminder of what I meant by the big picture, you know, someone who really sees, you know, because, you know, remember, a constellation is not just in a local universe. It's also in a super universe and in the grand universe, and right, I mean, there's, right, they have to take into account grand universe issues, you know, at times, I'm sure. What those are, who knows, but they would, yeah.
The advisory or highest body of constellation legislatures consists of the House of Peers, the House of the Divine Sons. This corps is chosen by the Most High Fathers and numbers 10. Only sons of special experience may serve in this upper house. This is the fact-finding and time-saving group which very effectively serves both of the lower divisions of the Legislative Assembly.
Okay, so you see the material pragmatism coming in again. You know, I mean, to try to, you know, issues about the efficiency of the whole system, to have this group of 10 that are lubricating the whole process, you know, and helping it to flow more smoothly, to kind of be funnels to help bring in what the other two bodies need, you know, the fact finding. You know, and then, like I was saying, you know, lubricating, the time saving. You know, so you've got this, you know, this group that's just dedicated to improving the efficiency of the process, right? Which is all very much about individuality consciousness and perfecting in relative to individuality. You know, it's not just the unity thing, and of course. You know, we know there is a nearby planet that has taken a step that we haven't, you know, because of their definitive reformation on that island continent, in their greater objectivity of all the reflecting that it took to totally reform their entire society like they did, they got the insight, you know, we ought to have an advisory body, a third body of our Congress. You know, remember the neighboring planet has this third body, you know, that is populated by those very, you know, the more elderly, very wise, experienced senior legislators, you know, and they're done being down in the trenches, you know, and you know, you've got that advisory body. Yeah.
And it's called what?
The Global Elders. Yeah, I mean, again, just, you know, if we reflect, we will, quote unquote, coincidentally, repeat patterns just like, you know, happened on the neighboring planet. There's only one universe that can come into our recognition, you know, down from our superconsciousness. Yeah. Reflecting individuals on any world will get this really great idea to have three branches of government, you know, and things like that, right? Right? All this stuff comes down from on high. Just reminding us of that. Like we pointed out, the language itself, you know, comes down from on high. You know, so that it's possible to tell us about things on high in English without having to coin, you know, 100,000 words. Because all of the basic elements come down. All right, so you know, so we all know that this is, you know, this is a lot of what we're seeing here is in the same mode as that whole paper on the neighboring planet, you know, giving us points of reflection on patterns and other examples of how to translate an ideal into an idea, you know. You can't just apply that mindlessly, but it's, you know, it helps to have an example of how someone else did it in their circumstances.
When you say it comes down from on high, mm-hmm. do you think when they set up Dalmatia that was one of the things that they set up with these three houses?
No.
That's how it came down?
No, it's not you know, necessarily like that. Now, on a normal world, obviously, the planetary prince, you know, the planetary headquarters, and you know, and his staff, and all that, and the Adam and Eve, and all of the Adamites, they're a very immediate means for teaching the population a lot of these patterns that are on high, right? You know, since we don't have them, you know, and remember, like with especially with Dalmatia, I mean, we in short order lost everything they taught us way back then, you know. So it's not like someone got a little remembrance when we founded this country. It's like, oh, we should go back to Dalmatia, you know, what they taught us. You know, I mean, you know, there was no little, you know, faint flicker memory, you know, from way back then of that. We were, you know, it's a huge mystery of exactly how it is that they're gently sort of guiding this into existence. You know, they don't explain, I mean, even when they talk about it very overtly, like getting the 100 individuals that they're going to use to build the Prince's Staff's bodies out of, you know, how they got them from wherever they were, you know, to the planetary headquarters. You know, they tell you that it was done, you know. They give you a couple little hints, but, you know, I mean, they don't really explain. So, no, it's precisely. How exactly did they do that? You know, so they apparently aren't allowed to really disclose exactly how it is that we're tweaked like this. But even if we aren't literally tweaked, what I was kind of referring to, and is a general thing, we, independent of any sort of direct intervention, even if it's very subtle, we're all attuned to the cosmos. And there is an awareness, a truth that's in the cosmos, in the cosmic system. And we've been given an encirclement in the Holy Spirit. We've been given a means to become aware of these facts. You know, it will seem like we just get this out of the blue. Oh, what about doing it? Right? But you know, it isn't of our own fabrication. You know, especially now that everyone has a thought adjuster. You literally have a thought adjuster that's taking those forms on high and trying to build downstepped expressions in your superconscious mind, and letting material gravity, drift them down into your consciousness, without you batting them and smashing them. So you have a literal, little manipulator going on in your mind that's trying to get you to see the pattern on high.
Well, I want you to consider just one thing, because I don't think that the bloodlines from way back in Dalmatia have diminished. And I don't think we lost everything. I think these bloodlines have carried certain attributes up through the centuries.
Well, you have potentials in a bloodline to have better attunement to the cosmos. I mean, that's what's in play when they say they were asking for permission to conserve the more spiritual strains, to conserve the strains that have a more innate attunement just genetically to the Holy Spirit. But there isn't... you don't literally have memory that's carried forward. You don't want to think of it. I mean, the way this is often rationalized in traditionally amongst human is that there's some sort of like a collective memory thing that we're tuning into, And even when you recognize that we're all plugged into the mind energy system of the local universe, you don't want to think of it as plugging into a library on high and downloading info in a book. That's not the way that works, right? It's what you're plugging into is an ability to independently recognize what's logical, what's true. You see it on your own. It isn't just handed to you. It's like when we're trying to think about coming into relationship with the truth in this revelation. We can all read the words, their knowledge, their knowingness that can be given. Every one of us, can have impressions on the back of our eyeballs because of the words on the page in front of us. But we all have to discover on our own the truth that flows through the words, and we're given the ability to to synchronize with that and establish an experiential phenomenon within our minds through which that truth flows, through which recognition occurs. And so it isn't again, just like we said early on, it's what happens in us is a very much an experiential phenomenon rather than an existential one. And humans thinking about Akashic records and things like that, notions like that, see, is they're biased too much to an existential sort of thinking about the universe. That there's, there's just knowledge that sort of exists and you can download it. Like your computer downloads a web page. And that's not an appropriate analogy. That's not the way it works. You aren't given the ability to download knowledge like that. Not even beings on high can somehow just download that knowledge. They have to go to a library and open a book and read a page. It may be spirit substance pages if you're a seraphim, say, okay. But they don't. It doesn't just download into their minds. See, even those beings on high. Yeah. So that's what the Revelation is telling us, he has that distinct difference from what a lot of people have kind of imagined over the centuries about this sort of stuff. All right.
There's the suns.
Local universe suns. Yeah.
Like, for instance.
So, you know, Melchizedek's Verandadex, Lenonadex. Yeah. And other ones that they don't reveal to us.
The combined council of legislatures consists of three members from each of these separate branches of the Constellation Deliberative Assembly, and is presided over by the reigning Junior Most High. This group sanctions the final form of all enactments and authorizes their promulgation by the broadcasters. The approval of this Supreme Commission renders legislative enactments the law of the realm. Their acts are final. The legislative pronouncements of Edentia constitute the fundamental law of all Norleshadec.
Okay, so let's just deal with that last part first, because we were kind of speaking to that. You know, notice the definitiveness that they're stressing at the very end, like the way they started at the beginning. The constellations are the autonomous units, and all we were saying about how important it is for that separateness to be definitively there, like between the states of the United States and between the constellations and the local universe. See, they're stressing that again at the end, how important that is. Whatever a given constellation's legislature enacts is, period. No one can step in and say, well, I think you need to modify that sentence, you know, or, you know, it would be more like the local universe being settled in light and life if your law was stated this way, right? No, I mean, it's what it is at the time it is. These aren't laws that are going to stand all the way until the local universe is settled in light and life. Right? They're evolutionary laws. You know? Otherwise, why would you constantly have to be having new people being fed in? And you know, right? You're constantly retranslating ideals into ideas, legislative, you know, legal ideas, and enacting them. Yeah.
Would the growth of the growth of the Supreme would also play into this?
Right. That's the overarching fact that's making all this stuff move. Everyone has to keep up with the Supreme.
Yeah.
Right. The Supreme demands a different set of laws at a different time in a constellation. But still, it's the case that the laws of one constellation are distinct from the laws of the other. There isn't just one right way to downstep an ideal into an idea. But notice how all those of us who have positions of power now and unfortunately over-favor our spiritual consciousness start to believe this, that there's one right way to translate an ideal into an idea. And you're lucky if you can even get that part of it. You know, they think you can directly apply ideals, and you don't even have to translate them into ideas a lot of the time. Right? Just how false that is, and how potentially catastrophic that is. You know, you're implementing change without growth, and it's potential evil. Right? It doesn't matter how transcendent your visions of light and life are and your desires for that. It doesn't matter how positive your desires are. If you're getting ahead of the Supreme, you know, the same thing would happen on high. You know? They're all wise enough on high to not enact a law that would only apply to Norleshadec a billion years from now, when the Supreme is in that more advanced state. You know, they're not going to say, well, let's just skip the next billion years of evolution. Let's just enact laws that are like, you know, what they're going to be anyway a billion years from now. We can all see where it's going. That's what they're going to be anyway. Right? You know, who wanted to do that? Lucifer wanted to do that. He wanted to skip the evolutionary process. He wanted light and life now because he could see it. So why not just institute it now?
That's why we have the minds that we have. we can see that, but we can't maybe do it because the Supreme hasn't gotten there yet. But we still have that.
We have to be able to see ahead so that we have something to downstep to now. Right? I mean, if you couldn't see a more transcendent fact, you couldn't see an ideal. You couldn't translate an ideal into an idea. Right? You have to be able to see beyond the immediate. But you also have to have another eye that can see the immediate. Not just one eye that sees the then. You have to have an eye that sees the now.
And this won't stop.
This won't stop.
No.
It goes on and on ad infinitum.
As we ascend, we can always see farther than we can do.
Yes. You know, and we must.
Yeah.
So that what we do is potentialized with the future. So that what we do has a future time orientation. Right? You know, you've heard me comment, you know, just how catastrophic it is that some very idealistic people today literally demonize that expression, future time orientation. You know, they state directly that a future time orientation is racist. Okay? With the revelation, you know, you can see what they're getting at. What is a future time orientation? There is a genetic thing involved. You know, what race is it? Adamic. It's more human, right? It's upstepped human consciousness. Those who don't have much of a future time orientation are racial strains that aren't very uplifted. Right? There is a racial component to it. Okay, but to reject your future time orientation because you know, you've decided that it's racist to think that way. Okay, I mean, what are you giving up on? You're giving up on ever getting to light in life, then, right? You're deciding, boy, I would love more orgy of darkness and death. That would be really cool. It'd be an orgy of darkness and death, but at least we'd all be equal. No one would be racist. it's just so ridiculous to think this way.
Do we have this animalistic behavior since everything goes through the Supreme? I mean, so the animalistic behavior from certain places is in the Supreme as well.
Right.
So that's why it's there.
Right. It's there. It's a very rudimentary building block, scaffolding element of the Supreme. Yeah. If the Supreme didn't need animals, animals wouldn't exist. You know, if the Supreme didn't need us to be animal origin, we wouldn't be animal origin. It's obviously indispensable to this existence and the evolution and future of the Supreme that we be animal origin.
The way humans are animal origin are so much worse than any animal can be.
Right, because we're not, you know, see, and again, you know, when we say it's so much worse than an animal, I mean, what's that so much worse? That's having spirit, having relationship to spirit. That's what, quote unquote, see, remember the word worse? That's a spirit word, right? Bad, good, and bad, those are spirit words, you know? You have the sixth adjutant, and then problems begin. Yeah.
So when I say bad dog, they don't get it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. No wonder.
Now the dog says, why are you anthropomorphizing me? You know I have not encirclement in the Holy Spirit. Neither do I have the sixth or seventh adjutants. Right. So yeah, it's just, you know, and all of the, how the universe respects that process of evolution. The universe allows us to be lowly animal origin creatures for a long period of time because it's not. Merely a negative fact, the absence of what's good. No, it's good too. You know, because what is goodness? Perfectingness. It doesn't matter how lowly we are, how animal-like our animal origin, you know, expression is, it's perfecting like. So it's good. It's good in the context of the supreme. Right? So back to the laws here, just, you know, appreciating these laws. These aren't some sort of, you know, when they say their acts are final, right? Yeah. Don't hear that with your biased to existential consciousness. You know, that, wow, these beings actually enact laws that will stand in eternity. No, they can't do that. Right? That's not what they're doing. They're just meaning that no one can step in and, you know, and overrule them. The Supreme Court, you know, quote unquote, at on Salvington, isn't going to step in and say, "I'm sorry, Constellation, that is just too unenlightened a law, okay, and I'm going to overrule you." No, that's not how it works on high, right? You know, every constellation, I mean, ours doesn't even have a full complement of local systems yet, okay? So some of our laws are going to be very, you know, beginning, training wheels sorts of laws, okay? Some constellation that's been, a whole constellation has been settled in light and life for eons, okay? How different are their laws, okay? Does the Supreme Court on Salvington say, you should have a law like that constellation over there, because they're more enlightened than you are? No. Right, they respect the evolutionary process. See how relevant this is. See how this is just not being recognized, you know, by what we're doing these days. There's no respect for the evolutionary process.
So compare this concept of law versus the law of God as the love of God. You've said that many times.
And yeah.
So yeah. Is this a different stage of law, so to speak, versus the law, or is it, yeah, in a way just a downstepping of the law at the same flip side?
Right. So I mentioned this when we were going through paper 134 here just recently on symmetry of soul, because you see it there in paper 134. Why are these words in all caps? Why is the word sovereignty in all caps, or the word law in all caps, or you can find the word love in all caps, you know, in some place in the book? What are those all caps words about? They're trying to remind you that those are facts that exist at the highest level. There's absolute love. There's absolute law. There's absolute sovereignty. Okay, those are facts that you don't ascend above. They are at the highest level, and they're downstepped. Right? Our lowercase L-A-W is a downstepped expression of L-A-W, you know, all caps. Everything is a downstep expression, and they're putting those in all caps to remind you of some of those very foundational elements of this whole downstepping process. And like you're just reminding us, initially you think that way up on high there's this capital all caps love, and there's this all caps law, and there's downstepped in parallel. Well, yes and no. I mean, once they're downstepped, they start to be in parallel. But at their source, they're actually the same thing, you know. And so that recognition that all caps L-O-V-E and all caps L-A-W are actually literally the same fact, and they're only expressed in two different words because of when they get downstepped, there's a separation, you know. And you have elements in the local universe that are more directly related to the ministry of love, and those that are more directly related to the ministry of law, you know, and they're not interchangeable. They're not doing the same thing. They're doing very separated things way down here at this level. But if you follow the truth of what they're doing on high, it becomes one fact.
Yeah.
Oh, another question?
Is this an enactment of one's ideas, the potential evil, and or harmony in future time orientation both necessary then? Please explain, is perfecting like always good?
I mean, by definition, perfecting is good. I mean, you know, and what level it is, how much, you know, factually how ignorant that perfectingness might be. Okay, that has no bearing on the truth of that perfectingness. Remember, they're facts of time, but they're truths of eternity. So the truth transcends those differences of fact, one being quote-unquote more enlightened than another or more advanced than another or whatever, distinction you make. I think it was Don that was pointing out, this is here forever. Even when the grand universe is settled in light and life and we all transcend all of these things that we're kind of talking about now in terms of finite legislative, executive, judicial, all of that goes on and on then for eternity in the absentite age. You're going to be doing the same thing. There's going to be differences of perspective that need to be adjudicated. And it's just that you'll be adjudicating at a very high level. And more and more, see, in the absentite age, what we were just talking about the distinction between law and love, for instance, or power and personality, everything's going to change like that. Everything starts with the power-personality synthesis, for instance. Right? That's the starting point. So, from our perspective, the differences will be subtler than they are now. And in that simple sense, you start with them together, and the more you downstep them, the farther apart they get. Obviously, if you follow that back up, and you transcend all the finite separation, which is very large, and get up into absentite separation, it's not as large, because when you get all the way to the absolute, there's no separation. Right? So you're dealing with, in simple quantitative terms, a lesser differential, you might say. But that's a little bit of a biased perspective from where we are. Actually, it may seem small from our perspective, but it's actually bigger. The potentials in play in the absentite are much bigger than the potentials in the finite. If it wasn't so, why would this 4 outer space levels be so much bigger than the super universe level, right? Right. So don't let the apparent smallness of the separation, deceive you there. It's a mustard seed sort of a thing. It's a deceiving, it's deceptive quantitatively. There was a question here, yeah.
So I imagine when things are judged up there, is it judged on complete wisdom or everything that came before it?
There's a relativity of judgment. It's things in the celestial domains are not always judged with, complete wisdom, you might say, or something like that. If a low level of relative wisdom is adequate to the circumstance, then that deals with it. And why? Again, because remember, it's an evolutionary process. You can't short-circuit it. You can't bring that higher perspective, which is the future, down directly. You have to allow what's down there to eventually get to that. It has this very definite hierarchical thing that what's on high is flowing along, but it's judged at a higher level, and what's down low is flowing along, and it's basically judged at a lower level. Occasionally, if something is going on at a low level that impacts a bigger picture, someone will step in. Like they didn't just let the local system resolve the rebellion. The Constellation Fathers stepped in. Okay. All right, so there is some measure of that, bringing a higher perspective down. But it's only when those that that are observing things from on high recognize that an intervention is required. You know, I mean, the really definitive example we often mention in this regard is when a Most High observer establishes a regency, you know, and sets himself up as a Most High regent. And that recent one where three personalized adjusters immediately appeared at the side of that Most High regent. See, there is an example of someone at a higher level stepping into what's going on at a lower level, and he's stepping in not just with the perspective of the next higher level up, but the fact that those personalized adjusters are there means that what that Most High regent is going to bring into play is the highest level. He's going to bring the eternal past, the eternal present, and the eternal future into play at that point in space and time. Okay, so sometimes it comes down from a very high level and injects in. But obviously, only the highest objectivity can know when you can skip over so many levels like that and not be short-circuiting the process fundamentally. Okay. All right. Let's see. We've got one more paragraph, don't we? We did the last one here. Okay. We got off on that track because we were talking about their acts are final. Yeah. So I think we got everything there. So let's get a little bit more here about the Most Highs.
Three, the Most Highs of Nirlashadek. The rulers of the constellations are of the Virandadek order of local universe sonship. When commissioned to active duty in the universe as constellation rulers or otherwise, these sons are known as the Most Highs, since they embody the highest administrative wisdom, coupled with the most far-seeing and intelligent loyalty of all the orders of the local universe sons of God. Their personal integrity and their group loyalty have never been questioned. No disaffection of the Virandadek sons has ever occurred in Nebadon.
Okay, we talked about those basic issues way back when we were talking about the Melchizedeks and the Virandeks before. Remember in the paper about the local universe sons and how, you know, this difference between a Melchizedek and a Virandadek. They have similar integrity. Especially when you think about them in group fashion, right? But as they're pointing out here, there's in a Virandadek, there is a lot more of that integrity embodied in just a single individual. Definitely there's more integrity, more wisdom in a collective situation. That obviously has to be the case. But they can embody a greater integrity within one of them than any Melchizedek, has innately. I probably shouldn't say it that way. They, by nature, they have embodied in them more integrity than any Melchizedek does to begin with. I mean, obviously, as both Virandadeks and Melchizedeks perfect, they end up with equal integrity when everything is settled in light and life and whatnot. Okay, but they serve in this role because they're even when you're at a very rudimentary level of a manifestation of light and life in a local universe or in a constellation. They have a really definitive integrity. Remember, they're the very father-like expressions, the Virandadek, very father-like expressions. And so they can serve in this mode where you need some definitive existential integrity that's just there long before the Supreme is rolled along enough for that to get developed through an evolutionary process, right? There obviously has to be some there, to begin with, to maintain it. You know, there has to be vicegerent, vicegerents of the Universal Father, you know, in a local universe, you know, the Creator Sons, to get a local universe started.
But they're created that way.
Right, they're just created that way. They're not created as Master Sons, right? They're not created with that kind of integrity, experiential integrity, like a Master Son. And why not? Because you can't create that. That has to evolve. That's the only way it can come into existence. The Universal Father can't make a Master Son by fiat. Right? Only in the context of the Supreme can a Master Son be made. See, in that way, the Supreme can do something that the Universal Father can't. Or when we think about that, the Universal, you know, when you think about the First Source and Center delegating, I mean, you can think about that's one of the things that got delegated, the ability to do that. Right, so these very definitive little nuggets of that existential integrity are these most highs. Like I was mentioning, sometimes, like when they're serving as a regent, these Veronidecs show just how pure a conduit for absoluteness they can be. You know, not only are they close to an Ancient of Days, I mean, they're showing just how close they are to bringing absolute things right down into play.
Good. Since we have the Father Jester with us, which is a fragment of the Father, that means to me that's, you know, why we can rise up so high in our thinking, in our spirituality, because we have the Father right inside of us. Now, we may have to evolve through the Supreme, but we do have the highest of the high that lives within us.
Right. We have, you know, all this incredible potential, yes, to begin with. And it also could be a little problematic. You know, we also have the potential to maybe get ahead of ourselves a little bit. You know, you can get running up in that the verticality of that adjuster ahead of what you're able to stably express right now. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we can ascend all the way to the Isle of Paradise, whereas a spirit-fused mortal can only ascend to a local universe headquarters, right, because of what you're saying, right? There's all this potential, but to him whom much is given is much expected. You're expected to be very patient and very humble, because there's so much more potential for calamity for us to be impatient and you know, self-assertive, self-righteous. An angel doesn't, you know, a seraphim doesn't have a thought adjuster. So if they go off the rails, there's a definite limit to how much they, you know, they bring into play. But like you're just pointing out, what's our limit? It could go very bad, you know, if you turn all of this potential negative through your free will exercise. All right, so that's right. So that little bit, you know, they're giving us again, reminding of why it is that they serve in the way they do, because the constellations have to be these definitive rock solid lids on the boiling pot of pots of all the local systems that sometimes boil over, and there has to be this, you know, there has to be this very rock solid level immediately above the local systems that immediately clamps down on all those issues.
Right. So before you go on,
yep.
You know, they talk to these guys embody this, which makes me understand think that they kind of are created this way, which is when you were talking earlier about, to her question about, you know, even the high beings have to open a book and learn.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
Right.
Whereas these people are more created with that kind of intelligence or abilities or whatever. Mm. It's not necessarily experientially gained, so to speak. I'm sure they do gain it.
Right, right, right. They gain lots of, yeah. Right.
But they're created with that ability, so to speak.
Right, they embody the highest administrative wisdom. There's a whole bunch that's just by fiat built into them. You know, the Creator Son, the Creator Mother Spirit build this body, and when mind seats on that kind of a body, that mind works in this way. a way that just has this natural integrity and this little laser beam narrow focus, that Melchizedek's mind doesn't work that way. And Melchizedek's mind doesn't have such a definitive laser beam integrity. It's very broad, remember. They have this very broad spectrum of things that they can do quite well. But it's at the expense of being able to do, for instance, this at the level that a Rondodek can. You know, so there's a bit of a zero-sum game, see, that you can see here. In order for a Rondodek to be this definitive in this area, he can't be as broad. He's going to be deep, he can't be broad. You know, and with a Melchizedek, if they're going to be broad, then they can't be deep.
So when they talk about Havona citizens, you know, it says sometimes they are this, but they were created that way. They didn't get that way by having to go through all the experience, so it's a different...
Just all different shades of that same sort of thing. How much is eventuated into you? How much is just there to begin with? And then how much is something that you build upon that?
Why would there be, that brings the question, why would there be Havona? I've never thought about this before, but why would there be perfect beings that don't have to be evolved? Why would they just be there?
The easiest way to begin to understand that is just from a selfish perspective. I mean, think of it just from our perspective. Right now, I'm perfecting. One day, I would like to be perfected. How do I get from being a perfecting phenomenon to a perfected phenomenon? There's a literal physics to it. If you take a perfecting being and you put them next to and in relationship with a perfect being, there's a superadditive consequence of that relationship, a perfected being. You go from being a perfecting to a perfected being by leveraging off of them. They are your means to make that transition. Without them, you would be perfecting forever and could never put an ED. It would be an ING forever. To be perfected, it's a superadditive consequence of your relationship. So that's why you have to go through Havona. If you tried to go around Havona and just go right to Isle of Paradise, there's no way for you to go from perfecting to perfected. You have to come into relationship to them.
Reach paradise.
That makes sense.
So they do say in there why God created that, because he just...
Right. There's all kinds of reasons. That's why I said, but just think about that simple reason about why they, why do I care that they exist? You know, how is this important to me? All right.
At least three Rondodek sons are commissioned by Gabriel as the most highest of each of the Nebadon constellations. The presiding member of this trio is known as the Constellation Father, and his two associates as the Senior Most High and the Junior Most High. A Constellation Father reigns for 10,000 standard years, about 50,000 Urantia years, having previously served as Junior Associate and as Senior Associate for equal periods.
Remember, we touched on that issue before, too, and of course, if you'd forgotten, when they mentioned the Junior Most High as being the 10th member of that little group up there, dealing with the enactments of the legislature, so that's what the Junior Most High is. And it reminded me, that bit of having that little group of 10, there in that last paragraph of the previous section, again, notice how you've got all of the pragmatic issues that they're facilitating there. To have a final group to, to put the finishing touches on the enactment. Think about how, when the House passes, a bill and the Senate passes one, and then, if they aren't, the exact same one, then we've got to resolve the differences. And right. So you notice how, a lot of those issues are being facilitated by the advisory body, that third group, and then that final group, bringing it to a final focus. Right. So they have shades of some of these practical elements that we have on high.
Yep. But we give the executive branch the veto power.
Right. Yeah. See, you might notice that. See, there's no veto power, and that's their acts are final. Right. See, so that's a difference. you know, and you can reflect on, you know, why that's different here and whatnot.
Politics.
Now, you know, I mean, what's one thing you could think of initially? It's like, well, okay, the executive branch, so that's down at the local system level. So that would be like during the rebellion, giving Lucifer veto power over... Oh, I can see some problems with that system. Right? But just, you know, the way it's set up, yeah. And, you know, see, and again, you know, you can't just apply these mindlessly. You know, you got to think about what will work in our level, you know, in contrast to there. How can you take the truth of what's on high and express it down here? But, okay.
The psalmist knew that Edentia was ruled by three constellation fathers and accordingly spoke of their abode in the plural. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the most holy place of the tabernacles of the Most Highs.
Right, and that, you know, that quoting from the, let's see, what is that? That's the 46th psalm, I believe. In the older translations, you know, it does have a plural like that, tabernacles. Now, a lot of the modern ones, you know, have turned it into a singular. But, of course, you know, even when it has tabernacles, it doesn't have most highs, right? It's going to have just most high. The revelators have added the S on highs. That's like they said, their abode in the plural, see? Right, so the revelators are just pointing out, it's like, oh, you think about that, that's... Well, why do you have one of them plural and the other one singular? Obviously, they should both be plural. It should be tabernacles and most highs. But, you know, in our, you know, we always have this influence towards a very simplistic monotheism being applied to the statements in the Bible. And so with time, all the translations of the Bible become more and more simplistic, you know, and things that, you know, are trying to express the fact of the Trinity or, you know, multiple rulers on high, you know, all that stuff gets, you know, simplified into just some little one magic man doing everything, you know. Yeah. Yeah, but again, you know, they're pointing out, you know, yeah. You know, you were referring to this earlier, Sydney, you know, things that have been told to us. He's, you know, they're reminding you that psalmist was aware of how we had been told that there were multiple, you know, beings on high. And remember, you know, the Adamic revelation reveals up to the constellation level. Right? See, so we had been told, you know, that there are three most highs, and each of them has a dwelling place, and so that was, that, you know, hadn't gotten forgotten, and actually got into the psalm there.
Down through the ages, there has been great confusion on Urantia regarding the various universe rulers. Many later teachers confused their vague and indefinite tribal deities with the Most High Fathers. Still later, the Hebrews merged all of these celestial rulers into a composite deity. One teacher understood that the Most Highs were not the supreme rulers, for he said, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." In the Urantia records, it is very difficult at times to know exactly who is referred to by the term Most High. But Daniel fully understood these matters. He said, "The Most High rules in the kingdoms of men and gives it to whomsoever he will."
And in the Bible, it's just kingdoms, you notice, in that, rather than kingdoms. But
Does yours say kingdoms?
No. It's hard to see, because we always say kingdoms because the relators, you know, upgrade it like that. But they're giving it, you know, just as it's stated there in Daniel. You know, and again, we're quoting from this. Isn't that the 91st Psalm? "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." Again, you know, see, they're pointing out how things have been told to us. And, you know, notice, see, what I was just telling about, you know, still later, the Hebrews merged all of these celestial rulers into a, into a composite deity. See, you know, the Jews and the Christians are still in this mode, where they're trying to collapse everything down into just a single individual. And
Muslims
so
Muslims did the exact same thing. They copied the Hebrews.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you know, it's this fundamental monotheistic tendency, you know, to collapse everything down that literally is valid vestiges of things we were told long ago by those who knew. Yep.
So we know that the Most High is often referred to as the Constellation Fathers, but who are the other Most Highs?
Oh, okay, well, I mean, like we're just pointing out, I mean, there's, you know, you if you just say Most High, you're referring to the Constellation Father. If you're saying Most Highs, you're referring to the three, the Constellation Father, the Senior Most High, and the Junior Most High.
Oh, that's it?
And then sometimes you're going even beyond that, you know, and just talking about all of the Veranda decks in their various leadership roles. You know, we'll get to that up here in Section 5.
What about the Most High Observer?
Right, and then bringing in things like Most High Observers, right? See, so it's used in various modes. I mean, if it just is Most High, it's either referring to just the Constellation Father, or it's referring to the Most High Observer. It's referring to kind of the singular individual at the two endpoints, all the way at the top or all the way at the bottom, as it were. And then, but if it's Most Highs, you got to figure out by the context, you know, what group of them they're referring to.
Would Gabriel ever be a Most High or Michael?
No. Okay. No, I mean, the Verondadex are higher than Gabriel or Michael.
Oh, really?
See, in the sense of them being called Most Highs, okay. Right? I mean, a Most High Regent, he's not subject to Michael. He's bringing the stuff that's above Michael down into play. Maybe even above the Ancients of Days, like I was saying, right? And so that's when the word most, it's not just more high, but really, whoa, it's like most high.
That's really good.
Right, higher than Michael, higher than, yeah.
Is that Emmanuel?
No,
Emmanuel,
what?
Is that Emmanuel?
Who's who Emmanuel?
The Most High, the Most.
No, remember, the Most Highs are about the Veranda-Dex.
Yeah.
Emmanuel is not a Verondadex. Who's Emmanuel? He's a Union of Days. All right. He's coming down. Yeah, that's it. That's the of days ones. Right. That's a different thing. Okay. Now the of course, you know, this is a very, very important. I bring this up a lot. But Daniel fully understood these matters. Right. You know, when he's talking to Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, you know, and saying the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will, all right, and the revelators are trying to point out, yeah, okay, Daniel is literally working with the planetary government, okay? He's an open interaction with the planetary government. He's their mouthpiece. He's speaking for the planetary government, you know, and that the Most High Observer is thinking he's going to remove kings thing. You know, they remove kings and set up kings.
Right.
He's informing Nebuchadnezzar that the Most High Observer has decided that you're sorely wanting in your position here, and you are threatening the evolutionary process here of civilization. You either shape up, or he's going to teach you a lesson. You know, and Nebuchadnezzar got taught a lesson. The Most High removed him from his rulership.
Do that?
Yeah. We don't want to get off way off on that. Go read the book of Daniel and see how that all played out, how he ends up in the wilderness and all that. But you know the bit about Daniel fully understood these matters. It's like in the fourth and fifth chapters, I think, of Daniel. It's right at the beginning. You know, read those first chapters of right. So is he just a destiny reservist? No, they don't fully understand these matters. No, see, he's got to be a cosmic reservist. He's got to be working openly with the planetary government and. Right. See, so the only way I can think about how to explain how he can fully understand these matters is if he's a cosmic reservist. Right? Someone who's not ignorant like destiny reservists are. All right.
The constellation fathers are a little occupied with the individuals of an inhabited planet, but they are closely associated with those legislative and lawmaking functions of the constellations, which so greatly concern every mortal race and national group of the inhabited worlds.
Now, I won't do any more than just read. Okay, here we are reminding you of a paragraph in paper 134 again. You know, when they say they're a little occupied with individuals, you know, more about race, group. Okay, what's that paragraph? This rule of the Most Highs in the kingdoms of men is not for the especial benefit of any especially favored group of mortals. There is no such thing as a chosen people. The rule of the Most Highs, the over-controllers of political evolution, is a rule designed to foster the greatest good to the greatest number of all men and for the greatest length of time. Okay. Just another statement of that same fact, that don't look to the Most Highs, even if it's just, you know, even if it's the Most High observer down in the trenches here with us, for some individual help. You know, if what they do impacts individuals, it's likely to be negatively. right? Yeah, because if you do what's best for the most people for the greatest length of time, it's going to pretty likely go not so well for a small number of people for a short period of time. Right? Right, just remember about what's going on with the Most Highs when they're inserting themselves into play. They are little occupied with the individuals, you know, whether they live or die for the greater good. Right? They do what's best for the most people. If that means all those individuals die, well, then all those individuals die. They're not concerned with such things. They're not going to, it's like, well, we can't do that because, you know, 50 people would die. They don't think about it that way. Right? If those 50 people need to get individual consideration, someone is going to, you know, step in addition, you know, and advise the Most Highs or whatever. Right? But in and of themselves, they're not concerned with individuals. All right.
Although the constellation regime stands between you and the universe administration, as individuals, you would ordinarily be little concerned with the constellation government. Your great interest would normally center in the local system, Satania, but temporarily, Urantia is closely related to the constellation rulers because of certain system and planetary conditions growing out of the Lucifer Rebellion.
So just, you know, I mean, that's all pretty straightforward. But just, you know, and what I was saying before, notice how it works both ways. Not only are they not, you know, concerned about you, you're not concerned about them. I mean, they're really, you know, they're not dealing with individual issues, ascension issues, stuff like that. They're dealing with civilizational issues on worlds and in systems. And the individuals are being dealt with by other beings. And, you know, those who might consider the individuals, like Machavent and Melchizedek, get overruled sometimes. And the Most High Observer overruled Melchizedek, who didn't want those individuals to die. The Most High Observer said, no, all those individuals are going to die. I want Abraham to kill every one of them, man, woman, and child, just get rid of them all. And so the Most High has delivered your enemies into your hands. Right? So, you know, just, you know, to think about how there's this obvious tension, this give and take that's going on between law and love. Right? See, and Melchizedek was kind of thinking on the love side, and the Most High Observer was thinking on the law side, and he fought the law, and the law won. You knew where I was going there. That was too easy.
But we rehearsed that in the same breath.
Right.
You know, just because, you know, the Most High said, okay, you're out of here,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that they were annihilated.
Right. Did Abraham kill any of those Maranchus structures that we call souls? Okay. No. No soul can be cleaved by a sword. Right.
So they were just out of here for their time
to come. Material pragmatism dealt with material issues. Their soul is not a material issue. Right? Okay. Most eyes are dealing with material issues. And they don't have to worry that if they, in their actions, that somehow souls are going to be destroyed.
No.
That's not what they're doing. They're not doing that. They're not throwing out spirit-destroying energies or anything.
The Edentia Most High seized certain phases of planetary authority on rebellious worlds at the time of the Lucifer secession. They have continued to exercise this power, and the Ancients of Days long since confirmed this assumption of control over these wayward worlds. They will no doubt continue to exercise this assumed jurisdiction as long as Lucifer lives. Much of this authority would ordinarily, in a loyal system, be invested in the system sovereign.
Okay, just before you read that last one, just one little thing there. Notice again what we're talking about, this whole bit of adjudicating things. And the Ancients of Days long since confirmed this assumption of control over these wayward worlds. So when the Most Highs assumed control, there were many who said, I believe that's not an assumption. I believe that's a presumption. You know, I believe that's that foreign potentate stuff, and I'm going to take you to court. Right? And they took it to court and went all the way up to the Ancients of Days, and they confirmed this assumption of control. Right? That's what they're talking about. So there was a whole legal battle that went on that they're alluding to between the lines there. You end up with a definitiveness of action that's a lot like what they said about the legislative enactments. Their acts are final. So there's this high degree of finality that comes from the constellation level in different modes. And it's, like I said, it's because of the Verondadex are what they are, that they're these very father-like expressions. You know, and they're very definitively connected to the Ancients of Days, the capital J Judges. You know, and again, just that little reminder, very father-like expressions. You can't have a father-like expression of love without an equal expression of law. Right? So, you know, you want to be a little tempered in thinking, I want the Father to be very definitively manifest tomorrow. Are you sure? You know, because the Father does the trumpet thing and stuff sometimes, right? So, right, it's a lot different than a lot of people think. You know, you actually might want more of a Melchizedek to step in than a Veronica, a very father-like one. You might want something that's a little more mother-like. Right? Something that takes into account time a little bit more, is a little gentler, okay, than the father that has no concept of time. And if he intervenes, it's in his atemporal fiat way. Right. Okay.
But there is still another way in which Urantia became peculiarly
which is hard to say.
Related to the Most Highs. When Michael, the Creator Son, was on his terminal bestowal mission, since the successor of Lucifer was not in full authority in the local system, all Urantia affairs which concerned the Michael bestowal were immediately supervised by the Most Highs of Nerlashadek.
Yeah, in that little vignette, remember what happens after the baptism, after Jesus' baptism, when he's out, you know, working on making the six great decisions and, you know, and all those issues by himself. Who comes to this planet and directly speaks to him? The constellation Father, the Most High. Not the Most High Observer who's already here, you know. No, literally the constellation Father, because of what they're just saying here. It's the constellation Father that has to certify that the technicalities of his bestowal are completed. And he literally comes in person and tells Jesus that directly, face to face. He's made, you know, visible to Jesus and speaks it. You know, remember Gabriel and Jesus are in a confab a little bit there, and then the Most High steps into the, you know, into their meeting and gives them that message. So yeah, so that's what they're referring to there, is that that whole issue of whenever in the Jesus papers, whenever they have a little aside and they talk about him having some connection to the Most Highs or whatnot and what he's doing with the bestowal, that's a special sort of a thing. Normally he would be interacting like that with the system sovereign. So normal bestowal, Creator, Sons, and bestowal missions would have that sort of interaction with the system sovereign. But he didn't, you know, as integrous as Laniforge is, still he was interacting with the Most High. All right. Next time, you know, you mentioned Emmanuel, who's down from the Union of Days. It's the Faithful of Days, and we'll get into that next time. That whole issue of that parallel element that's going on, the downstepped expression of the parallel between Emmanuel and Michael, you know, what's that like at the constellation level?
It's funny, too, how they always, you know, in songs, they talk about Emmanuel. You know.
Right, and again, right, and remember, that's not because we know about the Union of Days and someone taught us to sing about the Union of Days. The Revelators have just taken that name and used it for the Union of Days instead of for that monotheistic God. Remember, when humans are singing it, it's just, you know, the one God thing, and then this some sort of weird magical thing about Jesus being the Son of God, and how, you know, and the rationalization with that, right? I mean, it's all very simplistic, right? Yeah, but they say, no, we're going to use Ancient of Days. We're not going to use that for the Universal Father. We're going to use it for these beings, and Emmanuel. We're not going to use that for, say, Michael or whatever. We're going to use that for the Union of Days, and right, they're just reusing our names so they don't have to coin some new one. Yeah. All right. Let's take a moment here.